Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome to another Roswell show, and we have a man who's a legend in Roswell, Clifford Stone. Most people refer to you as Sergeant Clifford Stone, and you were retired. You served 20 years or what?
22 and a half years, sir.
In what?
In the United States Army, sir.
And we'll talk a little bit about your book, but before we get to that, it's a pleasure meeting you because I've read some of your stuff and a lot of people have talked about it, and now we're going to get to find out firsthand.
Thank you,
and
sir.
You told Dennis Balthaser, we were talking about subterranean bases, you say you have some plans, huh?
Oh, yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that. How did you come about that?
Oh.
Or can you tell me?
Well, I have a whole lot of documentation.
Yeah, I know that. That's what I'm getting to.
I visit a lot of government sites, and I'm fortunate that a lot of the things that people don't even know where to go to look, I know where to look. So I have all kinds of information. If I start talking about Antimatter Drive, people say, oh, you saw Star Trek once too often. Yet we are actually working on antimatter drives, and people aren't aware of that. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact that there was feasibility studies on what they call advanced propulsion systems, and that was sponsored by the United States Air Force Research Laboratories. And they actually have a manual out about talking about traversing wormholes using antimatter drives. Warp speed.
Wow.
And there's even another feasibility study out that talks about teleportation and the feasibility of doing that. Now, they say it's not within the near future, but I would suggest that a lot of things that wasn't in the near future 20 years ago, they're here now. We look, the Air Force does studies saying, okay, where are we going to be, say, 50 years from now? They did one such study in 1945, and they missed out because a lot of things they said, which was really fantastic back then, we have surpassed. They did a study in 1995. Actually, they did two studies, Air Force 2025, which is where are we going to be 30 years down the road, and that was done in 95. And the other study was done by the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board, where are we going to be in the year 2045, 50 years down the road? Both those reports dealt with existing technologies and how we were going to exploit them. For example, can you imagine an aircraft taking off from an airfield, having no fuel on it, synthesizing that its fuel?
Manufacturing it as it goes.
Yes, sir. And if you get a puncture, don't worry about it. It will go ahead and heal itself. And these are things that we're actually working on today.
Yeah, well, I've heard terms like living metal and things like that, so that's probably along that line.
And, well, I don't believe mankind is not capable of doing things, thinking and coming up with ideas and thoughts and formulating those thoughts into the technologies that we have. But I do believe that some of the technologies got a kickstart because of things that we have recovered. If I was in California right now and I was sitting with some friends of mine, we'd be talking about, you know, as everyone should know it, of course, it would all be classified. We'd be talking about things like, gee, okay, we got this, but how did it get started? There had to be that vision. It's like we had a fantastic program, which I'm really enthusiastic about. We just released a CD with it. There's pictures of it, too, there. But it was called Project Dinosaur.
Tell me a little bit about that. You and I talked about that on the phone.
Project Dinosaur actually got its start in Germany during the war. They were working on a method of getting a rocket into space to come over here and say hello to us. They had some fireworks they wanted to deliver to us here in the 48 states that are adjacent. So they were working on this. Fortunately for us, the war ended before that happened. Fortunately for us, we got the plans and the technology that they had already developed. before our adversaries did. We very enthusiastically started to hit up on the program by 1954-55 time frame. We had technical reports on how we could do it. Money stopped us from doing it. But the first project that they were hitting up on was a lenticular or saucer-shaped craft that we were going to put out in space. It'd be out there for several weeks to several months, have a crew of 4 to 6 people. In the event of war, they could launch missiles or drop bombs from out in space, and no one could do anything to stop that. There's still not a whole lot that's been released on that particular program. It's known as the Langley Lenticular Lifting Vehicle. I'm still trying to get information, more information on it. The other one was like a wedge-shaped UFO. Or, I'm sorry, like a wedge shape. Now, the interesting thing about the wedge shape, there was a photograph taken in 1947 in Arizona that the FBI went to visit the man, talked to him about it. He took a CIC agent, who later became an OSI agent, CIC meaning Counterintelligence Corps, OSI, Office of Special Investigations, the equivalent of the FBI and the U.S. Air Force. The CIC person wanted the photographs with the original negatives. The gentleman in question went ahead and said, okay, I'll bring them over to the FBI headquarters tomorrow. When the FBI agent and the CIC agent left the gentleman's home, the CIC agent, or the FBI agent, turned to the CIC agent and says, hey, you know, he asked you if he's going to get those back. You didn't answer him. Is he going to get them back? The CIC agent said emphatically, probably not. This is a matter of national security. Those pictures never made it to Blue Book. They were taken to the Pentagon. They stayed there at the Pentagon until the gentleman asked for them back because he was going to release them and let True Magazine use them for an article. When he wrote to the Air Force saying, hey, you guys have my pictures, I was wondering, can I get them back? Ruppelt said, this guy's just trying to jump on the bandwagon. We have no report. We have no pictures. Well, a colonel from the Pentagon said, yeah, we do. They're in one of two classified files that we have here at Air Intelligence. By the way, Captain, you should go ahead and write a letter of apology for us not getting those back to him. And we believe them to be a hoax. He never did get his original prints back. Mm-hmm. He never did get his original negatives back. This is crucial. The negatives he could have taken in, had them test them, and really destroyed the Air Force's conclusion that they were hoax photographs. To this day, I do not believe them to be hoax. Also, the crash that occurred here, people are referring to it as being like a hill shape or wedge shape UFO that was recovered. What I'm suggesting here is that the early UFO reports sparked the imagination of many people that were involved in the air industry at the time, and they saw a technology there that could be utilized. And they went to work on it. That's why they were very enthusiastic about Dinosaur. What I'm pretty certain of is that some of the technology that may have been involved is technology that we exploited that came from someplace else. Now, the reason I state that, if I mention to you the U-2 plane, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure.
If I mention to you the SR-71... Mm-hmm. You know exactly what I'm talking about. If I go up and say Dinosaur, then you, oh, yeah, I know about those. About 60 million years ago, they roamed the Earth.
That's what I said to you on the phone. I didn't know they were in the Mexico.
And, well, this is one of the states that has a lot of fossils.
Yeah, I know.
But the whole situation is that program was more viable than either one of the two programs that I just mentioned, the U-2 or the SR-71.
And they're both real.
And, of course, most people think, well, Dinosaur never flew. Oh, yes, it did. It went out into space, but it would not be until 1961 the first flight was be taken. December 12, 1963, they killed the program. Here again, lack of funds, and we had this silliness looming on the horizon we called the Vietnam War. So we went ahead and decided that we were going to go ahead, go to war, and put all our money in there and put all of our trust in the U-2 and the SR-71, which were very good aircraft. And they killed any more research on dinosaur, or so they say. I honestly believe that dinosaur lived on. And it's more sophisticated than anybody knows, and I honestly believe today dinosaur is still flying, and it can do very marvelous things.
Like, for instance, what? I mean, we're thinking about 48 people out in space, and we don't know about it.
Well, I'm going to...
one thing.
Yes, sir. But I'm talking about in the near envelope of the Earth's atmosphere also. In the October 1973 war, I was told a story by an Egyptian colonel. If it's all right with you, I don't want to disclose where that was told. He knows where it was disclosed. He's heard the story.
Talking about your friend.
Yes, sir. But when Israel was about to collapse, when they were invaded October 6, 1973, by the elements of the Egyptian army and the Syrian army, they were about to collapse. The Air Force, that the Israelite Air Force could not go in, neutralized the tanks and the infantry that was on the ground. And that was thanks to the surface-to-air shoulder-fired missiles to take down the aircraft. He told me that they knew it was U.S. aircraft. About four of them showed up. Very weird-looking aircraft. Now, at the time, I was thinking F-111s with their wings back. And he said that they just started to do a loop, a circle in the air. They would fire their shoulder-fired missiles up at these planes. They would get up so high and that they'd just fall to the ground. Well, when they fall to the ground, you still expect them to explode. They didn't explode. This enabled the Israelite Air Force to neutralize the threat that was about to end the existence of Israel. The U.S. to this day denies that ever occurred. But I got it firsthand when I said, I think I know the aircraft. I was actually told, you know, you stay in your office and you don't bring it up no more. Do not bring the book in. Well, they shouldn't have been worried because at that time, the term, and this was, by the way, 1984.
Okay.
The term was still classified. Dinosaur was still classified. Somebody went ahead and thought it'd be cute to go ahead and put dinosaur on a T-shirt and a spacecraft there. And the United States government actually went and rounded up all those T-shirts because it was a name that no one was supposed to know. Now, remember, it was killed in 63.
Yes, sir.
So, and some of the documents on that CD that I gave you were just declassified this year, March 17th. And
now this CD is available.
Oh, yes, sir.
And can you give me an example of some of those classified documents? What do they say? Backing up your story or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, sir, except for what happened there in Israel. One guy actually, I think, knew a little bit about it in one of the histories that was written because he was talking about how if we had dinosaur at the time of that attack, it would have made things so much easier for the Israelites. Well, I think we did have dinosaur at that time because we had no space-based assets and we weren't flying U-2s or SR-71s over the specific area of the Mediterranean where the Soviet Navy had taken up position to go in and reinforce Syria and Egypt and assist in the occupation of Israel. Every unit at that time, I remember it well because I was still in the military. As a matter of fact, I was sent greetings and salutations. I'd been a fun-loving civilian for 28 days. And now I find myself back in the uniform asking myself, what am I doing here? But I was back, and this was going on. And if you remember, we also had the a major flap, UFO flap in October 73. But the big concern was what the Russians were going to do. And the reason we knew about it was...
The Russian threat was real at
yes,
that
sir.
Point, and we had a major UFO flap, or you're saying there was a connection there? Or just a coincidence?
Well, I think there was a connection there. I think that our visitors are very interested in some of the things we do. We were on the brink at that time of total annihilation, because had we got into it with the Russians at that time, or the Soviet Union, it would have ultimately led to a nuclear exchange. And I am of the belief that Israel will not just let herself fall. She will destroy herself, and I mean with nuclear weapons. I believe Israel does have a nuclear weapons. They would use them. They will fall on their own sword before they will capitulate to any other nation.
And the extraterrestrial involvement is to stop it or watch it or monitor it or what?
This is our planet. They're going to let us do whatever we want to do. I firmly believe we are also a nation in, or a planet in quarantine.
You're a sergeant first class, right?
Yes, sir.
And retired.
Yes, sir.
And you obviously had a pretty high clearance because you've seen a lot of things.
Well, the interesting thing about the clearance is that I wanted to apply for a clearance because I felt I needed it in order for promotions. First attempt was there in Germany. And I had a SPO sergeant, that SPO is SPO's Security Plans and Operations. No, if you do that, they'll keep you quiet. And I was able to talk pretty much freely on UFOs at that time. It didn't get me in trouble until I got here.
Here in Roswell?
Yes, sir. And you know,
happened there? How'd you get
involved? I almost got court-martialed. I was getting calls.
You were still in the service?
Yes, sir. And one thing I don't want to talk about is I was more involved in what I'm saying here.
Okay.
But there was a reason. I mean, I'm a 71 Lima, and they send me to Roswell, New Mexico, after requesting that I put in my request to go to the Sinai Desert to be on the multinational
force. Right,
oh, yes, sir. But they call, no, you're going to Roswell. And I'm sitting, what's at Roswell? And I'd been back in the States for about 2.5 years, 3 years. Normally you're ready to go overseas. Well, they were sending me to the New Mexico Military Institute.
Well, that's right down the street.
Yes, sir. And I was with the Military Science Department there. It wound up that when I got there, I was getting calls from various agencies dealing with UFOs. I even talked to some groups here, reference UFOs, and some of the powers that be did not like that. My life became a living nightmare, and I thought some of the folks that I dealt with had forgotten me. Well, they didn't. Ultimately, I wound up, I got relieved of duty. I was isolated, essentially not being able to do anything, put into a room where I stayed except to go get lunch. But then I was exonerated, and after being relieved of duty, getting an adverse EER, one of the highest peacetime awards you can get for service, I was awarded that, the Meritorious Service Medal.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I have the distinction of being the only service member, living or dead, that got a medal for service during a time he was relieved for duty and got an adverse EER.
Yeah, that's hard to believe, but at the same time, things like that happen.
Oh, yes, sir. The other thing was hard to believe. Here it was. I was going to Germany. The family was here, and I needed to take a leave, and I requested a 30-day leave so I could move my family actually back to Mississippi. We had a home there. And
by Fort Jackson someplace?
Keesler Air Force Base.
Okay, okay.
I had some interesting assignments.
but
I went ahead and I said, well, I need to get my family back there. And, well, no, you can't do that. And they held me and held me and held me. 3 days before I was to go to Germany, I was given leave. Didn't give me no time to do anything. So we're buying the house where we're at right now here, so we stayed there. I went to Germany. When I went to Germany, I got a letter from 4th ROTC region granting me the 30 days leave. Like, what am I going to do about it now? also where my assignment was supposed to be, it didn't turn out to be where I was supposed to be going. And I found that I was going to be back involved with the non-existent issue of UFOs. So the people who really control that, whether you're military or the alphabet soup of the military intelligence, no one knows who that small nucleus is that controls it. So I figured if I put in my request for retirement, I will be able to go ahead, retire, and they won't be any the wiser. So I went ahead after being there for about six months in Germany, and we started to have things happening in Belgium. We had things going on in the...
talking about in the UFO world.
Yes, sir.
You're right.
In the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union lost a fighter, MiG-27. In the summer. We were able to keep that quiet for 72 hours and it never broke over here. Things got really hot for the pilot. He bailed out. Then the plane regained power and it crashed in Belgium. But UFOs, along with their occupants, was being seen in Russia even. And we were actually...
When you say their occupants, what were you talking about there?
Well, there were several different types of occupants.
Okay.
You had your classical grays. You had some that looked like inflated balloons, like you might say, about 10 foot tall, that would just float. It didn't look like they were walking or anything like that, but they would float, and they would go up over fences, things of this sort, the whole school saw them. Their military was concerned about some of the things. As a matter of fact, there was a recent release of a CIA document that makes reference to a pilot being killed in 1989. There were other things that have happened, and I think those documents have come out where the CIA was making reference to them also, where the military officials of the Soviet Union was alluding to, yes, we have our own problems with UFOs. And the one thing that I didn't want to be involved with was being in Germany for 4 years and the family not being there. So I said I was going to take leave, went in, put in my retirement, didn't utter a word to the powers that be on the other side of the fence. October 30th, I took leave, October 30th, 1989. Came back November 30th, I was to report to Fort Bliss to out-process and complete my retirement. I got to Fort Bliss, and they attached me for 60 days pending approval of my retirement. The only problem was the retirement had already been approved. They had to revoke those orders, which you're not supposed to do that unless it's in time of war or you're on a by-name listing that says, we need you and you're staying. It'd be very, very difficult to state that they needed me to be in a 71 Lima. Of course, there were other things that I was doing, and they were short of people. What I was doing along in the UFO field at that time, and I'll say reluctantly because it was, they went ahead and thought they were going to keep me, but I went ahead, and if they called my bluff, I would have still been in the Army for about another 10 years.
You don't want to tell me what that reluctant job was? Okay. I'll let you off the hook.
It ties in. It okay. Gets me in trouble when I talk about it a lot.
Well, I don't want to get you in a lot of trouble on the
first show. I'll tell you something else. When you deal with it up close and personal, it really isolates you. And the only reason I started to talk about it was I had a personal tragedy that occurred, and I felt that my family needed to know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them first. Then I told some other people, and some other people told other people. And you get to the point where, gee, if I could just go back and deny this, but you can't, because to deny it, you're denying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it. I know what I went through. I lived it. And I actually started to check, can you prove any of this? And I have a CD at home called the Stoney's File, where I try to piece some things together. And there's circumstantial evidence. In several military publications, my conviction that UFOs are real. They were put, but they were put out there for a purpose because we knew something was going to happen in Europe. They were put out in October, November of 1980. And you might recall what happened at Rendlesham Field in December of 1980. There's still more to that story that needs to be told.
Tell our audience a little bit, because a lot of people don't.
Over the course of several nights between the 26th and the 29th at Rendlesham Field there in England.
We've done shows on it, but a lot of
there were UFO sightings that was taking place. There are allegations that there were landings and that there were entities that got out of these craft once they landed. Military personnel were involved. The military personnel saw these entities. Most are reluctant to talk. Some are coming out talking, which is a good thing. Some people are stopping short, and I understand why, that have knowledge that the entities were there in high places, who are coming out and talking, well, yeah, we saw these and nothing really ever happened to me. The military didn't come after me or anything like that. And as long as you don't talk about seeing the entities, they're not going to come after you. You just saw lights. You saw lights in the forest. But now people are becoming more and more brazen. They're coming out and stating that they saw a structured craft. And we're not talking just the privates and the sergeants, but
yeah,
we have officers that are coming out.
I think there was either a lieutenant colonel or a colonel.
Lieutenant colonel.
Right. Was involved in that.
Yes,
so
sir.
That's about as high as a field grade officer as you can get. So.
Well, he went on to make colonel.
Yes, so he didn't
and,
hurt his reputation. Or we don't know. He may have made general otherwise.
But he's coming out and he's talking more. But what I'd like to see is for more, what I'd like to see is the documentation that I know is there come out. When we become,
we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about that. Sergeant Clifford Stone is our guest, and we'll talk about the DVDs and his book and a few other things. As you can tell, it's a very interesting hour. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. We're in Roswell.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.